8:05 on Tuesday, the 16th of March, we're present is Representative Keller, my co-chair Representative Munoz, myself, Bob Heron, and the former Speaker of the House, the fabulous John Harris. We're going to hear your bill today, sir. So we have HB 318, Unregulated Potable Water Systems. We have some, you have some information in your bill packets, and the department is available for questions. Pete, did you want to open up, or do you want us to go right to questions for the department?
Will of the committee, if you'd like to go straight to the department.
Before we do that, is for members, is there any questions for the sponsor or for Pete before we get started? Seeing none. Kristen, are you available for answer questions?
Thank you, Chair.
Kristen Ryan, are you available to answer questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'm here.
Okay. Let's see who else is who's willing to. Okay. We have a couple other people that are available for questions. Jill Lewis, Division of Public Health, and Michelle Kane, Division of Environmental Health, both for available for questions. We have three people available for questions. Representative Harris, do you have any questions for the department that you'd like to ask?
Mr. Chairman, Kristen, it seems like what we have here in this particular case, and I'm hearing about it happening in other places around the state as well, not just in my district, is you have a regulated water supply that's used by a few folks, and the cost to supply that water, both in the form of money and in the effort made by either the department and or anybody else involved, seems to be either onerous or not in a regular form or whatever. Can you explain, having heard some of the issues that have come forward here in the last couple of days of testimony, this bill's been before us, where the department intends to head in trying to resolve some of these issues and bring about a much easier, less cumbersome way to provide good drinking water for the citizens, for the people of Alaska who may not particularly live in an area where they're on a community water system. Can you enlighten us a little bit on to where you think the department is going to go to try to accommodate these folks? Or are they just going to be left out there to their own solutions to try and solve their own problems?
Representative Harris, through the chair, we try to do everything we can to help these all water systems. There's about 1,600 federally regulated water systems in Alaska, and of those, 295 are extremely small ones. They're the size of Salcha or smaller, and we try to provide as much technical assistance and support that we can to help them stay in compliance or get into compliance. We try to insulate them from the federal rules as much as we possibly can, but we are restricted in many ways by what the federal government has already dictated as mandatory for a water system that meets their definition. So while we try to educate them and help them understand the rules and how to comply as cheaply as possible, we really have our hands tied, unfortunately, in bending the rules. If they're already a federal rule, and we enforce no rules beyond what EPA requires. The state has no additional requirements for these federal systems beyond what EPA is already mandating. So I don't really have much ground to maneuver other than to try to provide as much technical assistance as I possibly can to help them get into compliance. Now, that said, I have to say that the current requirements for a public water system are all based on someone else getting sick or dying somewhere else. So while we may not have a case in Alaska where somebody has died from cryptosporidium from their water system, it's happened in the U.S. somewhere else. And that is why EPA has drafted a rule that now says you have to test for cryptosporidium if you're a surface water system. So all the rules are based on some incident of somebody getting hurt. And so there's I guess, a public health reason for them. For a groundwater system, the requirements really aren't that difficult yet. They may eventually be there, and we're hoping not, but we do hear conversations from EPA that they're looking more at groundwater sources as a potential problem. But right now, all they really need to do is test. They don't have to do treatment if they don't have anything in their water. So I don't know how, I don't think it's unreasonable to require a system to test their water to make sure they don't have something in it that's dangerous. And the things that are required to test are outlined, and there's a clear public health reason that they're being required to test for that item. So I don't know if that answers your question. I mean, our plans for the future are to continue to provide as much support as we can to those water systems so that they can provide safe water to their community and stay in compliance with EPA. We've developed some methods that seem to be working quite well. If we have a water system that's having a particularly hard time, we've got this intensive sort of intervention process where we go out to the community, not only us, but there's also nonprofits that provide support to water systems that are funded through other federal mechanisms. So we go out with these nonprofits and other funding agencies and the USDA and anybody who cares about drinking water, and we go out and we intensively work with a water system for a week, and we get their operator trained, and we explain the system, and we try to really work with the local government or whomever is operating the water system. It could be anybody, really, to make sure that they're set up as best as possible to do it. And that seems to be working for our systems that are having real trouble. That seems to be a real helpful thing, and then we continue it with follow up. It's sort of a mental health model, really, to continue to make sure that they're keeping on track. But that kind of initial intensive shock of support, and then follow up seems to be a method that's working for us, and we'll continue to use that in our communities that are struggling.
Chairman,
go ahead.
Kristen, can you describe to me the efforts that were put forward or the direction that was given by the department in this particular case and in any other? How did you go about giving the folks in Salcha at this particular water system direction on how to deal with their water system, or did the department just notify them that they were out of compliance and then notified them that they couldn't use the system anymore? Can you give me a sort of a step-by-step indication of how your department went about this?
Well, Representative Harris, through the chair, I have not seen your bill packet, but I believe there's quite a bit of communication between the department and the water system in it. I'm guessing what's in there. The Salta community has been a water system since the 90s. We've been working with Salta since, I think, 1990 is when we first have a record of them in our database as a water system. So we've been interacting with them for 20 years. Last year, they put a notice in the paper advertising water. That's when we contacted them, to say, are you, you know, has something changed? Are you providing water to more people now? Because if you are, and then you now are a federally regulated system, you're not just a state system. And that's when the dialogue started. I think that is what has gotten us here today. When we had those communications with SALCHA, I haven't seen every single email or heard every single phone conversation. I know several of my staff were involved, and I'm sure the conversations were, well, if you're going to serve this many people, then you are going to have to do a few things to be an approved water system, approved federal water system. You have to have an engineer come look at the well to make sure it was drilled properly and is cased properly so that contamination isn't getting into the wellhead. It's not a very difficult thing to do. I understand it can cost some money because it's hiring an engineer, but that's an initial step we require that all water systems have to go through to make sure that contamination isn't getting into the water at the source. And that's a very common occurrence if the well isn't drilled properly. So that's the first thing I'm sure we told them they would need to do if they wanted to serve water to more than 25 people. The first step is that they have to get their well evaluated. The second step is that they need to do testing. There are several things that the federal government requires testing for that we as a state don't. So once you cross the threshold to become a federal system, you have to test for more things. And I'm not saying it wouldn't be good for the state systems to test for those things as well, but as I said earlier, we don't want to put any more burdens on systems than we think they can handle. So we haven't gone there. But the federal government is requiring that they test for inorganics, for volatile organic compounds, make sure there's no fuel spills that have gotten into the water system, total coliforms, which is what they would have already been testing for, lead and copper to make sure that there isn't some sort of copper or lead issue from the piping, from the well casing, radionuclides, which actually there's quite a bit of radon in the environment in that part of the state. And so it off-gasses basically in the water, and so we need to have them test to make sure that they don't have too much radionuclides in the water. And I've seen some results from other water systems up there where they were elevated, so that is a legitimate request. Nitrates, again, which is a life-threatening issue, and arsenic. And again, there's lots of naturally occurring arsenic, and we need to assess if there's too much in that water for safety reasons. So the water system would have been told they need to go to a laboratory and have their water tested for all of those things, which would be several hundred dollars. They would have had the results back in approximately a month. So that was the communication we have with SALCHA. We wouldn't tell SALCHA. Our goal would be for them to do those items, and then we would know their water safe and they could serve the entire community. As I recall, SALCHA was kind of on the fence about that for a little while and not sure if they wanted to go that route or not. And we started to have conversations with them then at that point that, well, if you choose not to go that route, then you need to limit how many people drink your water because you can't be a federally regulated system without complying with the federal requirements. And after some time, SALCHA probably decided they weren't interested in going that route, so that's when we communicate that they will need to reduce the amount of people drinking the water so they don't cross that federal threshold.
Okay, so if I'm understanding this correctly, then once they decided to serve more than 25 people, they fell under the federal EPA regulations, which The state has primacy on, and you're forced if you want to continue to get the EPA funding or whatever that you enforce that. Do you have any kind of a time frame in which you can give these water systems any leeway, or that they can come into compliance, or is there any help that you can give them as a department to get into compliance, or did you offer any of that, or what was the status there?
Representative Harris, through the chair, that there's no set time frame. You know, once we learn about a system that is now meets the federal definition, we start to have a conversation with them about what it's going to take for them to comply or reduce their population that they serve. And there's no limit. There's no hard limit that says, you know, you have 30 days once we find out that you have to get into compliance. We have several water systems that that takes time to do the things to ensure your water is safe. For example, even if SALCHA decided they wanted to become a federally regulated system and be in compliance, if they did the testing, we would be fine with that while we waited for the engineer reviews. You know, as long as they could show the water was safe from testing, we would be allowing them to serve the whole community while they continued to get the engineering part done. So there's a lot of flexibility, I guess, to a degree. I mean, we have an obligation as a primacy state to regulate them accordingly, but we're quite flexible. If we know a system wants to be a public water system, a federal one, and are working with us to achieve what needs to happen, we're quite flexible. But SALCHA chose early on they didn't want to go that route, so that was why they were kind of given an ultimatum to, well, then you need to serve less people. If you're not going to work toward getting into compliance, then you'll need to go this other way. So yeah. That's sort of the situation there.
And so is your department, Kristen, is your department set up to actually help these folks, or did you offer help and they turned it down, or what led us to this position we're in today?
So, Representative Harris, through the chair, I mean, the only help I can provide or my group can provide is technical assistance. We can tell them what lab to go to. We can give them a list of engineers. It's all on our website. You know, I don't know what more technical assistance we could provide SALCHA, because the stage they are at is not that difficult. I mean, there's really not much. If they were a system that needed to do treatment, for example, to get rid of arsenic, say their results came back as having high arsenic, then I can see them needing quite a bit of technical assistance to understand what different treatment options they have, what's going to work best for their community. But they're not even at a stage that's that complicated yet. I mean, they just simply need to go to a lab and run some samples and then hire a private engineer to look at their well casing. So there really isn't much technical assistance we can provide at this point. You might be asking about variances, and I know Pete Fellman feels that we have not used all of our options to give the community a variance to comply. And unfortunately, that's not the case. A variance can only be used for specific rules. And this is all defined in the federal law. I have no flexibility what a variance can be used for. And it cannot be used for a water system that is just needing to make sure they don't have anything dangerous in the water. So I can't provide a variance for testing. I can't provide a variance for the initial engineering review. What we can give a variance for is if the testing came back and they had high arsenic, but below a certain level, not dangerously high, but above the minimum level, we could provide them a variance to take the time and the money to figure out how to get into compliance with arsenic, what treatment method they needed to use to reduce the levels. So we can't just grant a variance by federal law for a water system that just doesn't feel like doing any testing or having an engineer look at their system. So I know we're providing all the technical assistance we can to them. I don't know what more we could do for them. Because the cost to get that initial work done is so low, I'm not even sure they would be eligible for any funding from the other branch in the department that provides funding to water systems and grants and loans. I think they have a minimum level of $100,000 for a grant or a loan, and $15,000 wouldn't even be eligible.
Kristen, do you know of any other water systems throughout the state, or water suppliers around the state that are facing similar issues as this one?
Representative Harris, through the chair, I know as I said earlier, there's 295 water systems in the state that are the size of SALCHA or smaller. So I'm sure they all, you know, it was a struggle for these small homeowners associations. There actually are three fairgrounds that also provide water to their community. So those systems went through what Salta is going through, and I know some of them probably felt it was onerous and not necessary, just like Salta feels. But I just want to reiterate, it's the federal laws. We're trying to soften them as much as we can, but I have my hands tied to a degree.
Thank you, Chair.
Please note for the record, Chris, that Representative Gardner came in at 8:12 and Representative Sisna came in at 8:20 to join us. Kristen, a couple of hopefully more or less yes or no answers to my questions, if you could. This is Bob Heron. Did you advise the community in writing that they may qualify for a variance if they did a couple of things?
Mr. Chairman, to my knowledge, no, because they wouldn't, I mean, unless they were further down the road to where they were needing to treat their water because they had some contaminant in it that isn't considered life-threatening. So it's not a nitrate issue or a coliform issue. It's arsenic or lead and copper. Perhaps we have many small water systems that have high lead and copper from the piping. It's just leaching into the water. Well, we can grant a variance to a water system to figure out how to deal with that because it's not life-threatening. It's something if you're exposed to over your entire life, you could develop cancer from, but there's time. So that's why we can allow time for that water system to figure out how to deal with it. So, no, I can't believe we would have ever told Salta there was an option for a variance because they're not to that point yet.
Okay. Did you tell the community if they do A, B, and C that they may qualify for loans or financial assistance?
Mr. Chairman, I probably not because, as I said earlier, they're not to that stage yet. That you couldn't get a loan for the initial assessment of the water. The cost is too low. So we wouldn't have wanted to give them false hope, I guess, that unless they got to the point where they needed to install some pretty expensive treatment, that's when that process would have kicked in, and they may have become eligible for those options. But your initial well assessment and testing, the at least the state doesn't grant loans or grants to communities to just do that type of work yet.
Okay. Does Salta have the ability to be a disadvantaged community as far as in state statute?
Mr. Co-Chairman, I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that. My guess is no, but I will have to double check.
Okay. Is there any other questions? Representative Sisna.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I am sorry, because of personal handicaps here, I got here late. And I didn't want to miss anything in this, I think, important discussion on something that actually Alaska, the country has a 99% safe water standard, 99%. And in Alaska, it's somewhere in the 70% tile. And recent research has shown that there's an enormous cost when the water system for a community drops below that safe water. It's extremely dangerous, and mostly to kids. So we're really talking children. It's not the people that would be calling their representative or any of that kind of thing. We're talking about the kids that really suffer on this. And I've read the four steps that Kristen Ryan has stated was being asked for, and that, in fact, it wasn't until the fairground was offering and advertising safe water, or water, not safe water, but water, that suddenly this came into something that captured the attention. What I've been listening carefully here, and I'm still not hearing any kind of plan that's gone on between the community and DEC or federal government, one or the other, that kind of gets to an answer here that addresses what are, I think it's not just a constitutional requirement. I think there's a moral constitution that we have, a requirement that we have here. And I think that's something that that we're, it's evil. I'm sorry, but that's where I'm at. If we don't pay attention to safety issues here. And it sounds like it's not a huge problem. That's what's really crazy here, is that it sounds like it's a matter of getting people sitting together and getting over any kind of maybe biases people have and getting down to the bottom of it. And I don't, Christian Ryan, I'd really love to hear from you. Has this been totally by email and letters, has there been any actually going out there and talking with people and developing maybe some understandings and a way? And I know that you guys are really overwhelmed, but this is kind of one of these that's come to light, and it suddenly all of a sudden becomes an example that is right in front of us and we need to learn from.
Representative Sisna, through the chair, our staff did go out and visit with the fairground representative on several occasions, as far as I understand it. So, you know, we do try to get out to these communities and talk with them. But we can't, you know, if they don't want to be a water system, I mean, our hands are tied to a degree. If they're going to be serving more than 25 people, they've got to comply with the federal requirements. And we try to say that as nicely as we can, but sometimes that's not what they want to hear.
Thank you. Pete, could you please come to the table?
I got a quick question.
Just go ahead. Representative Keller, a question to the department.
Yeah, good morning, Director Ryan. Is it 25 persons, is that 25 per day, or is it the same 25 all the time? I mean, how does that work? If somebody's coming to fill a water tank in a pickup or something like that and isn't there for a week, and how does that work? Is it 25 per day?
Representative through the chair, that's the easiest way to say it. It's averaged. It's 25 people per day over a 6-month period. I mean, the general rule of thumb is just 25 a day. You know, if somebody's taking water, it's people, not the individuals getting the water. And so if they're taking the water home to their family, we count, you know, the size of their family, not just them. But we sort of average it. As I understand it, Salta was pretty significantly over that, so there wasn't a question of them being on the line. If they're on the line, you know, we tend to be flexible. But I don't think that was the situation here.
Thank you. Of course, the liaison came to visit me. Mark came and visited me, and the intent of this legislator is, rather than taking the approach that the sponsor did, is I'd like to sort of turn it around, and I've asked Representative Harris to have his staff try to figure out another way to look at this, and I've just received it is a CS, a blank CS, that we can all look at. And if Rob, if you could give this to Merritt as well, is another approach to this. So I've asked Pete to come up and explain to the committee and to you, Kristen, and of course, a look at this new approach rather than the original legislation. So, Pete, if you could please state your name, affiliation, and run through this new CS, blank CS.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Pete Feldman, staff representative Harris, and I actually have not seen a copy of the CS. We worked on the language over the weekend. It was late coming. It was 11 o'clock last night before they finished
it. Do you have one now?
I have the language that we sent over, and so if I could just see that it actually mirrors what we sent.
Again, for everyone, this is by request of myself to Representative Harris, is that we go from the way the original bill was set up to not prohibit to a more proactive approach to the process, and so.
Through the chair, Representative Herron and members of the committee, the CS does reflect the language that we've been working on, and that is to clarify in statute some of the possible solutions that seem to be written into the CFR. When the CFR was updated in 1996, there were problems that were addressed that had to do with unfunded mandates, with assistance to small communities, disadvantaged communities, and all of those issues are addressed in the CFR and provide a means for the state to exercise flexibility in the way that they deal with small water systems where people are disadvantaged or don't have the ability to get water or find ways to find or provide assistance so that they can find water supplies in the meantime and so on. And so what we hope to do with this piece of with the CS through the chair is to put in statute that technical assistance and water supplies can be identified, variances, if possible, can be provided, guidance and so on, and possible loans and grants. And again, it is very complicated in the CFR. However, the federal law does provide ways and means to supply and to help small water systems so that they can come into compliance. Just a few issues that I wanted to clarify. The well in Salsh actually was drilled sometime after 2003. I have information from 2005 when people first started using the well. The well has been tested and has never had a problem with safety. That's not the issue. The issue really revolves around the fact that there were less than 25 people a day, and the a day is the important word that we're actually using this well. There's people who come and fill 100-gallon tanks. They take them home, so when this well was knocked down so that only 24 people or 25 people can use it, really, we weren't past that threshold. Unfortunately, the way the community felt they were dealt with by DEC was that when they verified that there were less than 25 people a day, then they were told, well, it's really 25 people a month. And so it was like a moving target from DEC. I've seen three different ways of wording this 25 people issue. But in the CFR, in CFR 40, 141.2, it clearly says that it's at least 15 service connections or regularly serves an average of at least 25 individuals daily. That's what it clearly says. If we've adopted that as our statute by way of regulations, then I cannot find any other definition in statute that changes that language that we adopted. So in our view, there were less than 25 people a day using this water system, and they were still required to limit the use. And so, but back to the engineering part and the variances, there's a lot of language. The whole section on variances is a couple hundred pages. The engineering requirements, fairly extensive. I have a copy of what DEC posts online. There's lots of paperwork to do, and there are costs. This system is maintained voluntarily through community support, and the costs are fairly significant. $15,000 for, you know, a volunteer system is fairly significant. Can't read my own notes. There was one other issue. I think that was it. It is a volunteer system. Anyway, hopefully we can clarify this. Hopefully we can move forward with this in some language that will, in statute, hopefully clarify what DEC can do. And other than that, I'm open to any questions.
Yeah, before I go to Representative Sisna, it is the intent of the co-chairs not to adopt the CS today, so there's time for everyone, all committee members and the department, to have dialogue with the sponsor, and we will consider the CS at a future meeting. Representative Sisna?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Bobby, my question to you is, I guess the real pivotal thing for me was that there was an advertisement that was a public advertisement that there was water for people. And I can imagine that in a small community where you've had a hard time getting water that feels like it's safe, and that's kind of the pivotal issue here. But I can imagine where, in fact, there seems to be some enormous unfairness in the fact that DEC came in and said that it needed to be regulated and it needed to be tested, and that actually also, the fact that it's right here in front of us, makes me think that one of the things that we have not done a good enough job in the state is understanding the importance of clean water. And there really is, it's a huge cost driver in Alaska. It's part of what's pushing our health costs up. Our health costs are extraordinarily expensive, much more expensive, and people cost more than other parts of the United States even. And we're at the tops in the world, as I understand it. But that safe water is a real pivotal thing. And we have, this legislature has put into regulation here, and it falls under the federal guidelines, but there's testing that's required, and it's not just you send it in to somebody and you get it back, but it has to be verifiable so that we can really count on it, and that all the steps need to be taken to make sure it fits. And that hasn't been done, as I understand it. But do you understand differently? Has there been something that would fit into what the state would want that's been done on testing?
Representative Sisna, I do have copies of the last test that was done, and I understand from the Fair Association that they have tested every year. And it was done in a state lab, and it came back free of any coliform or any possible contamination. So the well's been tested as being a clean well. The other issue that you brought up was this supposable advertising. There was a story done about the Salsha Fairgrounds and Fair Association, and they mentioned that they had a well that provided water for members of the community. There wasn't advertising. It was a story done in the newspaper.
Okay, and as legislators in the public world, what we know is what gets in the paper sometimes is it makes everything public. It does make it public, and it pushes us all kind of into different actions, and like the press will come and ask you questions, and what seemed to be very innocent, very nice, all of a sudden looks like something quite different. And so here, but that still is the case here, is that people think they've done exactly what they should do, and unfortunately they don't understand well enough what the law is, and it is law. And that's what I'm wondering. And
through the chair, Representative, it's highly unlikely that somebody is going to drive from Fairbanks to Salsha to get water, or from North Pole to get water. And so whether or not it was in the newspaper or not, people aren't going to drive to Salsha to use a water well when they can go the other direction. So the number, it's not like it would even make sense to advertise to come to Salsha and get water.
Can I do a
follow-up?
Thank you. And yes, I think probably people won't go for that reason, but what they will know is there's a fairground, and they're going to go to a fairground, and there's water there. So that, and I probably think that way because, unfortunately, I've been through this mm-hmm. business of constantly looking at what people are saying about what they're hearing in the paper. But at the same time, there are laws, and oftentimes people don't understand those laws, and that's part of our requirement, is to teach them and make sure that people know. Safe water is something that's just really important. This CS looks like, and thank you for saying you're going to hold it, because it really, we need to look it through and make sure there aren't unintended things that weren't in it, but what's your opinion? You think this is a good thing, and the community will accept this?
Through the chair, Representative Sisson, I think this just clarifies and allows for average people to look in the statutes without having to go to the CFR and make determinations. So it would be much simpler to go to the statute and say, oh, you know, we have the ability to get technical assistance or possible variances or those sorts of things. And so it puts it in statute and just makes it easier to obtain and to recognize, you know, that there are other possibilities. And also it may help encourage the department to be clear with communities and go to them and say, okay, you know, here's what the possibilities are. Let's work together and try to keep it in an attitude of working together and not necessarily an attitude of an enforcer and somebody who's being enforced upon. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully it will allow us to take a different direction and allow people to feel like they can work together for the good of the community and for safe water.
Thank you. Representative Keller, then Representative Harris, and then Representative Munoz. Representative Keller.
Just a clarification. I don't think it'll take too long. As I understand it, Salsha right now is providing water and on the basis of agreement to a certified letter that was in our packet January 8th, 2010. And it says that it will serve on the requirement they have put themselves under is that it will serve less than 25 residents. And it does not specify per day, per month, or anything.
Correct, Representative Keller. And that was one of our issues was now we have 25 residents. The community was required, to sign the document that was sent to them in order to provide water for 24 or 25 people. They were required to sign and notarize that document. And so now it changed from 25 people a day or 25 people a month or to 25 residents, which to us is just not clear.
Thank you. Representative Harris, then the co-chair, Representative Munoz.
Mr. Chair, can I ask the department folks to come up here for just a second?
You have Kristen Ryan on line.
You guys, you're not here for this, Bill.
Merritt's here, but...
You want to, have you seen the CS yet? Do you have a copy of the CS? Okay, I just want to ask a couple questions about it.
Please, Merritt, if you could state your name, affiliation on the record, and then answer Representative Harris's question, please.
Good morning, members of the committee. I'm Marit Carlson Van Dort. I'm the legislative liaison for the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thanks for coming forward here. First of all, under the section here, unregulated public water systems, is that if it's more than 25 people, would that not be a regulated public water system?
To the CS, this is to the blank CS.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I mean, its title is under section 4603.082, unregulated, but if it's 25 or more, would that not be a regulated water system then?
Mm-hmm. It would be under the federal law, I believe.
Under state statute, would it be as well?
Got the AAG here, and Kristen's online, but I believe it probably would be,
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Representative Harris through the chair.
Okay, and then... So there isn't any confusion on line 6. Would it not be better that where it says 25 or more people are put in there per day, so it's not confusing anymore? So it's
Representative Harris through the chair. I think that would be a good clarifying point, and it would be conforming with the federal code if you said 25 people per day averaged over 6 months.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, if I could continue on. Then where it says on line 7, before prohibiting a consumption, the department shall, and been around here for a while, shall means sort of mandatory type mm-hmm. of a deal. So let's look down here what it says that the department shall do. And we just talked about a little bit, they shall provide technical assistance to aid in making the water system, da 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 da. I think that's probably something that the department should do and sounds like does do. And then the part that, have a little financial background and been on the finance committee a while, I get a little bit concerned about this, but it says that the department shall provide communities that have this public water system financial assistance. Do you know, off the top of your head, those two statutes, 4603030 and 4603036B, what that means? I mean, what is that, the $100,000 threshold, or do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Harris, without a statute book in front of me, I couldn't tell you what that is.
That's probably not a fair question. I'm just trying to figure it out. When it says the department shall provide financial assistance, anytime that gets mandated in there, I'm a little bit concerned about what that means.
Yeah, and you don't need to answer that right on the spot. I know you have the statutes in front of you, but the co-chairs will be looking for unofficial responses and positions on this proposed blank CS at a future meeting. But if you're willing to answer it right now, go ahead, please.
Well, Mr. Chairman, just looking at that section, it looks like those are the statutes that outline our municipal matching grant program through the Division of Water. And I think that's the program that Kristen alluded to, where there is a minimum threshold for the amount of either grant or loan funds that the department would consider. But I will check on that and get back to the committee.
That'll be good to explore, because maybe we need to craft something for this level that's available for some sort of loans. Representative Munoz, then Representative Sisto.
Well, that was my question to Kristen Ryan. Are you still online?
Ryan.
Kristen Ryan?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Kristen. This is Kathy Munoz talking. In regard to that point, you said that the department has financial assistance available for larger projects. That's what I understood you to say earlier. Are you not able to help communities with smaller financial requests, such as this project?
Ms. Co-Chairman, I'm not sure, because, as Marit said, that is handled in a different program in the department, the loans and Build Safe Water program and the water construction loans are in the Division of Water. So they've told me that they had a minimum for their loan. If you want a loan, loans are easier to get, but they do have a minimum that they'll provide. Grants are harder to get, and you, as I think the co-chairman was alluding to earlier, you have to show you meet some disadvantaged qualifications to get a grant. And as what I was told by the Division of Water is that SALCHA would not meet the requirements for a grant, because they aren't a disadvantaged community according to the definition. And they probably could get a loan, but loans are only given for larger amounts. But we would need to double-check that with the Division of Water.
Okay, thank you. And just one point I want to bring up for the public record, and that is, in reading the bill file, and you said that you had not yet read the bill file, but the tone of the correspondence has a threatening nature to it. And I just ask that you look at that and consider that for future interactions with community members, that it's very intimidating, I think, for an individual to deal with the large bureaucracy of the DEC. And certainly I support your work, but just please look at that and consider the impact that those interactions have and try to work to improve that within your department.
Ms. Kochar, you're absolutely right. I mean, we strive hard. Our division regulates a lot of things, and I know we typically regulate very small operations in EH. So our tone and our ability to work with individuals that aren't familiar with law, which is most people that don't live in our world, it's something that we try to achieve, to be polite and as helpful as possible and not come across rudely. So if I see anything that I feel is not appropriate, I'll definitely take that up with the individuals that did it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess Representative Sisson will be the last question for the day, and then we'll hold this, and so Representative Harris can work with the committee members and the department on the blank CS. Representative Sisson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, Kristen, this is my question is,
Just the nature of this being more what sounds like a public access to water rather than a private, if it was a well in on private property or maybe not private property but private residence, then one, it would be a household use, and it would be something that, sure, it'd be under 25 in a month. If it's a area that's roped off or cordoned off and is available to the public, but only on certain occasions, and that might kind of contain the use of it. But if, in fact, it's in a community that has over 25 people, and it's accessible because it's not a private residential area, that seems like something that maybe ought to be defined in the regulation, because and maybe I'm completely wrong on that, but it does seem different, because if it was a household, so is, and then the other part of this, is there any other public way to get water in Salcha? And that kind of possibility seems like something that ought to be factored into this. So is that there, and I just didn't hear it?
Representative Sisna, through the chair, we do have a very clear definition in our regulations that mimics the federal definition. We go a little bit lower because we have systems that don't meet the federal definition that we still regulate, which is where Salcha falls now. So, for example, if you're a state system, you are bigger than a duplex but smaller than a federal system. They're just the middle guys. So duplex is as small as we go. If you have a private well on your home or your duplex, you have no interaction with us at all. If you go beyond that, if you have two duplexes, then you have become a state-regulated system, which is where Salcha is, and you're required to do yearly testing for total coliform and nitrates only. And some systems do it more frequently than that. I think we're looking at trying to make it quarterly, but right now I think it's only yearly. Then if you meet the federal threshold by federal definition and state definition, then you bump into the more extensive requirements. And if you're, many water systems are not, they're a homeowners association. I mean, once you provide water to a certain percentage of people, I think the assumption is that those people would be willing to pay for that water and for the cost to get safe water. So I think that's part of the equation, is the belief that once you reach 25 people, that 25 people could pay a certain fee to make sure that the water they're getting is safe. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I think so, and we'll explore this further at the next hearing. And so, unless there's other questions, we're adjourned at 8:59. Thank you.